All right, welcome. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are here at the Hot Stove Society. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
Chef in the chapeau.
Chef in the chapeau, as you call it.
Well, that's the French term for the chef in
that
the hat.
Is correct.
I own several restaurants here in downtown Seattle. And, oddly enough, I do a few other things, like if you ever go to the Paramount Theater or Moore Theater, we do the concessions there. We've got where we're doing our show today, the Hot Stove Society, a little cooking school. Super fun.
If you and if you go down to Nordstrom, I heard you also are doing things over there.
I'm consulting with Nordstrom on the new restaurant opening in New York City.
Big thing.
That. I'm their culinary consultant, and it's very exciting. I have to be there the end of October for the opening. We're doing three little concepts with them, and it's super, super exciting. So lots of things going on. You know, Terry, we have a new sponsor on the show. Whidbey Camino Island. Looking forward to hanging with those folks at some point. We want to share with you the fun event happening out there. The farmers, producers, and chefs of Whidbey Island are passionate about what they do and where they live. At the end of the growing season, it's time to share the bounty of the land during the Whidbey Island Grown Week, a 10-day celebration of local products, services, and experiences coming up September 27th to October 6th. Learn more at WhidbeyCaminoIslands.com/Seattle Kitchen. You can also go over to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen. We've posted all about it there as well. Look forward to that.
When was the last time
you were up there,
Whidbey
Island?
Actually, I was on Camino. Whidbey, it's been a while. It's been a couple of years, mm-hmm. but... which Camino Island, you know, Cyril has a house there, so I go visit him.
You go up there. It's beautiful, huh?
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And this weekend I'm going to Shaw Island, so it's not part of... I don't know if it's part of that, but...
Very nice.
The
islands
are
gorgeous. Forward to taking a visit up there. It's going to be, you know, the farms that are around, all that way up there through...
Yeah.
North of Edmonds there, Mount Vernon, the beautiful farms. Looking forward, Skagit Valley is what I was trying to come up with there. So looking forward to that. Today on the show, we have common kitchen mistakes and how to fix them. We're going to have a dinner party using peaches in every course from cocktail to dessert. We answer questions from you, our trusty listeners. And Bethany Jean Clement is here from The Times to talk about their new food section. All that coming up over the next 2 hours. Please stay with us. It's super fun. We have a good time. I think we're going to have our taste of the week, too, which is exciting because Tina's already bragging about this nut butter she found from Portland.
So good. It's so good.
So good. All right. Up next, let's talk a little bit about ordinary to extraordinary, Chef.
Yes, sir.
Now, I don't know. Well, I do know. When you consider barbecue sauce, you don't consider like the traditional American style, what we consider like a tomato-based or chili-based barbecue sauce. I think of you as liking barbecue sauce with a mustard base. Is that
correct.
True?
Correct.
Tell me about your barbecue sauce. So what
my,
makes
my
it
barbecue sauce would be much more of herbs like rosemary, hard herb.
Hard herbs.
That can macerate into mustard and a little bit of olive oil, just a tiny bit. And that's usually what I put on my meat, you know, on the raw meat to macerate for at least an overnight, you know, like chicken, pork, whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I put it overnight, and then it really impregnates the meat.
So you're taking a jar of mustard, pouring it into a bowl, adding a chopped rosemary to it.
Rosemary, sage, put oregano, and then I put all that fresh chopped herb in there.
Any shallots or anything like that in there?
No. I don't put shallots because that stuff, you know, eventually will burn on the grill.
Uh-huh.
So
I'm
trying not to char everything. But the idea is to lather the meat, and then the next day you take a little bit of the extra mustard that you have on there and just keep that layer that's right into mm-hmm. the skin of the meat. And then you throw that on the barbecue off the flame, but very high heat.
Indirect heat.
And direct heat, but high.
Uh-huh.
You know, I like to be cooking high when I cook that meat and give it a nice sear so you have that nice char, not burned, but nice char grill mark onto the mustard.
Uh-huh.
And I just love that kind of barbecuing. And I'm not... When I do barbecue sauce, I try not to do... I don't do ketchup. I do tomato, but I don't do ketchup.
When you do a more of an American-style barbecue sauce.
Right, but I don't...
You use tomato, but not ketchup.
Correct. Some people use ketchup in their barbecue sauce. And
so what's ketchup is tomato paste,
sugar,
vinegar, water, sugar, like corn syrup. Yeah,
right.
So...
That's the part.
So you don't put any sugar in your American-style barbecue sauce?
No.
Okay.
I try to keep it as tomato-y as possible, and I'm also a big fan of the vinegar. I'm more like a... What is the style? It's like
apple cider vinegar.
Carolina style?
Yeah, the vinegary, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I like that style. I think if I'm going to do a barbecue sauce, that's going to be more my style.
All right. Let's talk. I'm going to take on BLTs because it's one of my favorite sandwiches in the world. And I find it to be a lot of people's favorite sandwich. We just put one on the Dahlia Bakery maybe 2 months ago. First time we've ever done a BLT to order. And we don't do many sandwiches to order. Most all of them are pre-made. It's our number one selling sandwich by 10 times.
No, I believe it.
By 10 times.
It's
like wiped out everything else.
Yeah. We put one on Lule's lunch menu a couple of weeks ago. As soon as the tomato, heirloom tomato started, it's a big, big seller for lunch. And it is delicious. It's actually BLTA.
I love exactly, with avocado, right?
Yeah, so you've got the avocado, the bacon, the lettuce. I think that a couple of things that I will say, because I tried it a few times already, and one time I was really unhappy with my cooks overcooking the bacon. I'm a big fan of, for me, I believe that if you're going to do a BLT, the bacon should not be crispy, dry paper. It should be like many people like
the
bacon.
You're going to get a lot of argument about that.
Well, I think bacon should not ever be cooked that much because you're not tasting bacon anymore.
Yeah.
You're tasting pork that's overcooked.
You are, and you are also tasting burnt sugar because
correct.
The bacon is cured oftentimes in sugar.
Correct.
And it does get to a point where it gets bitter and not so good.
I
agree with you on that.
I like to have a little chew on
my
bacon.
My father liked it. Warmed.
Well, I think a lot. And, I mean, it's fine. It's
warmed. It barely even curled. It was still like warm, and I hated that. Yeah. So I actually like it cooked, but not overcooked.
Right. Yes. I just think it's a matter of people love to put bacon in a pan and watch it curl up and render till it's dead.
The other thing I would say, a good BLT, you have to have a delicious mayonnaise.
Right.
And you have to have well-toasted bread. This
correct.
Whole soft, white, warm bread thing, not good.
Use a multigrain bowl from
Grand Central. Oh, I don't care
Grand
about the multigrain
Central.
On that. Yeah.
Grand Central.
No.
Oh, I'm telling you, man, it is delicious.
No, cheap white bread, well-toasted.
No.
Yeah.
That stuff gets soggy. No, that good country
not
bread,
you
give
it
a good... grill on the barbecue and make it nice, crispy, and then, oh,
you're going
to
start the barbecue for the bread?
Hell yes.
Okay. All right.
There's no,
I got you,
there
man.
Is no enough refinement when it comes to bread.
Some of us use a toaster.
Oh, that's definitely way over the top.
Okay. Up next, we have questions. Questions from you. Maybe we should ask you, are you a toaster? Now, if I have the grill going, I'll grill my bread. But
that's
if
what
I
mean.
Don't, I'm using a toaster.
Right.
Okay, just saying.
Okay, fine.
Questions from our listeners up next here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. We're coming to you from the Hot Stove Society. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
We've been doing this show now, 15, 16, 17 years, something like
please
that.
Please don't make us that old.
We should have like a big party at some point for our 20th.
Are we going to make it to 20?
I don't know. It depends if Cairo fires us or not, essentially. That's why we wouldn't, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should wait that long time.
Yeah. Okay, Tina, you have some questions. Tina's our producer, and she's going to be our announcer right now.
I am.
And why are you shaking your head about the dying and the death? Are you worried about that?
I don't
that?
Like the dying and the death. I don't like it when you talk about that.
Do you know it's going to happen one day?
No.
Okay, just making sure.
Thank you. But I really like the idea of a party. So I was in my head thinking, let's just pretend it is the 20th.
Did you see the front page of the Seattle Times? I think it was Tuesday morning. And they had the guy there that was ending his own life. He was an older gentleman. And I recognized him from a little restaurant that I pop into, Uptown China. He had a party in the morning. Let's see. No, in the morning he wed his longtime partner.
Wow.
And then in the afternoon he had a party and had all of his best friends. And then they sat with him while he ended his own life. And he had a terminal illness, and it was just, I thought it was, you know, they had dinner, a meal together, his favorite foods, all his friends, and got married, the whole thing, all in one afternoon.
I would want to go with a full stomach.
I hadn't really thought about it so much, like that kind of process. I think I'm a very private person that way, and I don't think I could ever do that.
Have a party for yourself just before
not have all those people hanging out while I'm dying and stuff like that. Yeah, it's like,
Okay, wait a minute, let me die alone, will you?
But I just thought it was a beautiful event that he kind of curated for himself.
And I think it's really also
nice.
For all the family, right? It's also for the living, so that you get
your
time to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And help the person pass over to the next place.
Yeah, yes. I think death is a lot more painful for the living than for the dead. I believe that.
Okay,
on those light notes.
we often talk about, what are you going to serve at your wake, right? What do you want served at your wake? Because that's what I think about the most, about dying. It's like, well, what are people going to eat?
Right.
And drink.
And, you know, Rachel Bell's wonderful podcast called Your Last Meal, where she interviews celebrities about what they would have for that last meal.
Yeah.
It's very good. You got to check that out. All right. I check out our Facebook page on the regular, and lots of people have lots of questions for you, too. So your first one comes from Brandon Jerwa. I love this question. He wants to know, what kind of music, if any, you play while you're in the kitchen?
Well, last Sunday I cooked all afternoon, and it was Lucas Nelson, Leon Bridges, Aretha Franklin.
Nice.
How's that?
Delightful.
And it was very nice.
It was very
And during
nice.
Dinner, a bit of Willie. Yeah, Willie Nelson a little bit.
I always, just think of the music that I play all the time. And then when The Big Night came out, to me really spoke to that kitchen dance that happens when you're cooking with your honey and you've got The Big Night on, and it really gave you a sense of what was important about food and music together. And so often I would pick that music when I was cooking and then replace it with the normal stuff that I would be listening to. But right now, it's Brandi Carlile.
All day long.
Every time we have an event here that I cook here at the Hot Stove and teach class, we have our entry music, and Brandi is my entry music. And it's awesome.
As it should be.
Yeah.
Brandi's great to cook, too.
Yeah.
For sure. All right. Emily Sakuma wants to know, I'm too lazy to do traditional canning, but would like to hear some ideas on freezer stock recipes for the end of the summer garden crops like zucchini, tomatoes, and eggplant. Chef Terry, I feel like that's your specialty.
Zucchini. I would make a big batch of ratatouille.
Does it freeze?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It freezes really well. And then you can reuse that, a couple months later.
What exactly is ratatouille?
So ratatouille is red onion diced.
Kind of an oval thing with a long tail.
Exactly.
A little mouse.
And there were seven in Ballard this morning in one spot when I drove to my workout this morning.
Don't.
They were just chowing down.
They're going to work.
I'm so phobic of them. So
anyway,
can we call it something
ratatouille.
Else?
I wanted to call Mike O'Brien, our representative.
So ratatouille originally is kind of like a vegetable casserole, and it is made with red onion, zucchini, peppers, and eggplant. And it is from the south of France, very much a Mediterranean dish, lots of olive oil. The way I like to make it is to saute all these ingredients, I dice them, and all these ingredients saute separately and then mix together. And it is a trick that often you don't read in cookbooks, but it is a very good trick to do, so you keep everything together. If you start putting ingredients after ingredients in a pan, you're going to overcrowd your pan. You're going to not cook the ingredients the way you want to, especially the eggplant, especially the zucchini.
You end up with soup rather than ratatouille.
Right. You end up with a soup and a stew that's totally mush, as opposed to a nice, I like to keep vegetables a little bit textural. So, I saute my red onion, fresh thyme, a little bit of garlic, olive oil, obviously. And then I put that on, after they're sauteed, I put them on the side. Then I do the zucchini. Then I do the bell peppers. Then I do the eggplant. I always finish by the eggplant. And the eggplant is just salt. I pre-salted my eggplant, let them render a little bit, pat them dry, dice them, and then put them in the pan with lots of olive oil, because eggplant will suck out all that olive oil you put in the pan. And then mix the whole thing together. And then you have a nice stew of vegetable. You put that in the freezer in little sandwich bags, and then thaw it out when you need it.
Well, that's a great way to use
I agree with
crops.
Everything but the sandwich bags. There are many nice reusable freezer storage containers.
But sandwich bag reusable. Yes, no. I reuse every single one of my sandwich bag. And what's with you, Tom? You don't watch
I don't believe him.
Okay.
Oh, there is two drying on my counter right now.
I dry mine, too. I reuse mine. All right. Lori wants to know, salt, when to use what kind? Table, kosher, flake, Himalayan, artisan, etc. How do you use your salts, and what kind do you use? Does it make a difference? Stumped him.
Throw it over your shoulder and wish for the best of luck.
It's such a personal decision. I guess I just use kosher salt daily, and then when I have other things, like a finishing salt where I want salt to play a part in the texture, then I use the big flake salt because it crunches, and that's just part of the texture, but it still is salty. There's some salts out there that are like the gray salt from France. They are super salty.
They're very strong.
Very ocean-like.
In my home, when my mom uses those, she only uses those for big buckets of water, like if you're doing canning or if you're doing other things, she puts a little bit in the jar.
The gray salt?
The gray salt. Because it is very, Selgri. Yeah. It's very potent. Very strong.
So I find that can be overwhelming. And then when I'm trying to get something with a little bit of barbecue flavor, let's say I'm cast iron cooking a steak, I'll use my Alderwood smoked salt. And it just gives me a little bit of that barbecue flavor that I'm not going to get in the cast iron. But I love the sear that you get on a cast iron.
Yeah, and you can smoke your own salt too. I mean, you don't have to buy smoked salt. You can use your own salt that you have at home and then put it on the pan under the barbecue, put a couple of chips in the barbecue, cover the lid, come back an hour later, you get smoked salt.
Well,
it's a lot easier to buy it.
It seems like it.
Just like the toaster.
Well, not if you're turning on the barbecue. Not if you're buying. Not if the barbecue is on already. I mean, it's not that
complicated. Is that the last one for us there,
Tina? That's the last one for you today. But if you have a question, head over to Facebook, Seattle Kitchen. Post it there, and we'll get it on the radio for you.
Okay. Who are we inviting? I think we should invite the Beck to our...
our dinner party.
Is it Beck or the Dead Presidents that wrote the Peach song?
Oh, no, it's the Presidents of the United States.
Presidents of the United States of America. Yeah.
They're not dead.
Not dead, yeah.
Presidents of the United States of America.
They're not dead.
No.
The not dead presidents are going to be invited. Dave and his band are going to be invited to dinner. We're going to cook them peaches.
All right. Looking forward to that.
I'm going to eat me a lot of peaches. And then I'm going to move to the country. On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Millions of peaches for free. Right here on Cairo Radio, it's Tom Douglas.
Terry Rotorua, the chef in the hat.
And we're going to have a dinner party. Tina, our producer, is your house available or should we go to one of ours?
Oh, your house is much nicer than mine.
Really?
Yeah, so I suggest we go to yours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sitting on the patio.
Go to Tom's house. You're going
to
make...
Why don't we go to our farm? Because our peaches this year...
Yes, please.
When you picked them off the tree and it was 90 degrees outside and they melted in your hand and dripped down your wrist and...
That's what a peach
unbelievable
should
peaches
be
this year. Yeah.
Yep.
So we got peaches, right?
You got plenty of peaches. Your challenge is to use those peaches in every course in a dinner party, starting with the cocktail. So what are you making for a peach cocktail?
Tom, you're going to make a peach cocktail
or
you want me to
make
it?
I'm happy to. So peach cocktail. I was just thinking because we have beautiful melons this year, too. Our Hannah's Choice cantaloupes were spectacular. They still are. We've got 800 in the refrigerator downstairs at the Palace Kitchen right now. They're ripe and they're ready.
One place to go to buy melon.
But when Jackie was making dinner at the farm last week, she took the melons, cleaned them up, made wedges, and popped them in the freezer to be chilled off for dinner.
Right.
Well, she kind of forgot them for a little while. And so we had these.
I see them.
It was like melon popsicles, but they were so sweet and so ripe that it tasted like sorbet. But they were half frozen, and I kind of love that texture. Kind of hurt your teeth a little bit, but at the same time, just was cooling in a
full
hot
of flavor
day.
Too.
Yeah, so I'm going to half freeze a peeled peach. So you know how to peel a peach, right? You just put a little cross hatch in it and in the bottom, and drop it into boiling water for 10 seconds.
What?
Pull it out, and the peel should come right. If it's perfectly ripe, the peel is going to come right off without having to do that. But if your peel is sticking at all, the little fuzzy skin, just drop it for 10 seconds of boiling water. Pull it out. You don't want to cook it. And then it'll just peel like nobody's business. The less ripe it is,
so, wait,
the longer
Tina
you
is
have
making
to.
A very funny
well,
face.
Well, I had no idea. That was a very good tip.
Have you ever peeled the skin off a tomato?
Yeah, but it's hard. Yeah,
it's really,
I have a new.
It's really not hard. it's just the boiling water thing. So anyway, so now I've got my peach, and I'm going to squeeze a little lemon juice over it, and I'm going to put a popsicle stick in it, and I'm going to pop it in the freezer, and we're going to chill that sucker right to a frost.
So are they cut in half or are they whole?
I'm going to put it in whole. I'm going to eat
it like that.
The pit's
still inside?
They're so soft.
Right.
It's hard that you have to kind of freeze them or else you're not going to keep them on a stick.
Right.
And then I'm just going to serve a little Moscato d'Asti with it, which is that fragrant, made with Moscato grapes, fragrant Asti Spumante style wine. Much less carbonation than Asti Spumante. Delicious, natural fermentation. Love that. Cheap, inexpensive, low alcohol. Mm-hmm. That is going to make your summer dinner delicious.
Sounds delish.
It probably should have been dessert, but...
It's a good way to
we'll
start.
Do something else for this.
My mom's coming, and she loves Moscato because she doesn't drink dry wine.
Right. That makes sense.
Yes.
Okay, appetizers. We're going to make a little peach salad because noblesse oblige. What are you doing for main course? Do you know yet?
I don't know yet.
Okay. Did you turn on?
To avoid what you're putting in the salad.
Did you turn on the barbecue outside yet?
I have not.
Because it's going to depend. If you turn on the barbecue, I'm going to grill those damn peaches. And if you don't, I'm just going to have them raw.
What do you think Dave would want? Because he eats a lot of peaches.
I think
he gets them for free.
And he sings it away. I think he would want them grilled.
Did we say that they're coming to dinner? The presidents of the United States of America? I don't think we said that.
Oh.
Dave and the presidents are coming for dinner.
Excellent.
Chris Blue.
Well, Chris Blue.
We're going to have some good music.
Dave. Yeah.
I'm going to grill the peaches, a little burrata, some basil, and some beautiful heirloom tomatoes that I picked in Jackie's garden because I know she's got some gorgeous tomatoes. And then make a beautiful tomato, peaches, basil, burrata, olive oil, beautiful sea salt on top, and just keep it very simple like this, a little cracked pepper, and that's it. Mm. Beautiful summer, definitely a very summery salad.
Mm.
And I like when it's clean like that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, burrata is a delicious thing if you haven't had it yet. It's kind of like mozzarella, except more creamy.
A little custardy center, yeah. I had it last night, as a matter of fact, with peaches. Yeah. And guanciale, a little cured pork jowl. So for dinner, I'm still hungry. I mean, we had a light little peach cocktail, and your salad is delicious but light.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make a heavy dinner, I think.
No.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
I was just about to think, I'm going to lose weight.
I'm going to take a delicious duck, a pekin duck, P-E-K-I-N.
That's
pekin
not
duck,
heavy.
Like a Long Island duck. I'm going to put it on my rotisserie, and I'm going to put some savories in the center, like oranges and herbs. You know, I have a whole bay
summer
leaf right
savory.
By my barbecue. But things that it might, because it's going to be on there a long time. It's my quarter bottle of whiskey duck.
So it starts at 10 a.m.
So I put a nice little pan of potatoes underneath the duck, put the rotisserie on, the duck starts to spin. I've got a charcoal fire. I put my lid on and just let it go low and slow for 5 hours, and I drink whiskey on ice while that goes. It's a perfect combination. Sitting in a chair watching a duck spin.
Thank God it's a quarter of a fifth, not a quarter of a gallon.
Well, an eighth goes into me, an eighth goes onto the duck.
On the duck,
onto the duck.
That's good.
And then when I pull it off, I'm going to have this gorgeous brown skin duck. I'm going to pull it off, let it rest for an hour. I'm going to debone it, and I'm going to put it skin side down on a little pan in the kitchen and render the rest of the fat off the skin and make it super nice and crispy.
Right.
Right? And then I'm going to make a peach sambal. So a nice... the peaches are so ripe you don't hardly have to cook them, so maybe even raw peaches, but kind of crushed with Thai chilies. And maybe crushed peanuts, and make a spicy peach sambal, like an Indonesian-style sambal, for my wood-roasted duck and my potatoes. And
that sounds so good.
Oh. I'm so ready.
Delicious.
And when I drink, I like to eat.
Yeah, no, of course. You keep standing up.
I know. And when I don't drink, I like to eat.
Yeah. Right.
Like Julia Child says, right? Everything in moderation, including moderation.
Correct.
Yeah. So.
That sounds
so
good.
That's our dinner. I took off the grill. I took it off the grill because you were on the grill.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm going to do a peach tart for dessert.
Okay.
I'm going to make a little almond. I'm going to use Tina introduced us to an almond butter that is made from ground up.
In Portland,
In Portland. And I'm going to use that almond butter to put in the bottom of my pre-baked tart shell.
Mm-hmm.
I made some pâte sucrée. I rolled the dough. Blind bake the shell in the oven, which blind bake means you don't put anything except weights. And then that shell comes out. It's part baked. It's almost baked all the way to the end. And then I put the almond butter that ground up as with chia seed in it. Put that as a base on the bottom. And then I put the peaches sliced right on top of that. And a nice dollop of whipped cream right on top of that.
I have one question about that, Chef.
Yeah.
That is an almond butter.
Correct.
Will the heat make the almonds the fat separate? Or you're not
I'm not going to heat it. I'm just going to put some after the tart shell is baked.
So you're not putting it back in with the peaches?
No.
Oh,
I'm not cooking anything. I'm just keeping it raw because I've been ripe peaches. You don't need to bake them. You know, I like them. I mean, the flavor of that fruit is so beautiful when it's barely touched. So you put that on top of the almond butter, and then you just make a nice dollop of whipped cream on the side. And that should be quite lovely.
Mm-hmm. Sounds peachy.
And by the way, lots of anise isop flower blossom sprinkle over that peach tart. I'm home. A glass of champagne.
I think they might even write a new song about this dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we should call them up and actually try to do this.
Do you? You think we could do it? Dave's a foodie. I know. Yeah. He would do it in a heartbeat. But
And it would be such a fun party.
We should film it, make that the video of the song, and then have them write the song.
Stop it. We're making this happen. This
Who's
production.
Bringing the millions of peaches?
Prosser Farm.
Ours are picked and done. They were awesome. We're picking pears right now. Also delicious.
Yeah, I just had a pear for the first time for this season. Ooh,
the valley is alive right now, Yakima Valley. And that's just, I drive that entire valley from the mouth of the Yakima, the headwaters of the Yakima up in the, is it the Cochilas Dam? Is that the name of the dam where the Yakima comes from? Something?
Anyone know that?
Natchez?
Cochise. Lake Cochise?
Lake Cochise, yeah. Is where the headwaters of the Yakima are, and it comes all the way. I follow that on the drive to the farm, all the way past the farm, and there's a dam in Prosser that backs it up in front of our property, and it's quite lovely.
Yeah.
Quite a lovely trip. When you consider, my in-laws used to live down in Hazel Dell, which is just north of Vancouver.
Right.
That drive was a three-hour drive or so, and then you have the drive to Prosser Farm from Seattle, which is a three-hour drive or so. Woo, no comparison.
Yeah.
What a beautiful drive to Prosser it is.
It's nicer to drive that way than it is to drive
somewhere. We want to thank the presidents of the United States of America for coming over for dinner, enjoying some free peaches.
Yeah. Hope they had a good time.
And Dave, if you're listening, which I know you do every week, the show you did with your daughters at the Obliteride this year was fantastic.
Yeah.
Up on stage there during Obliteride for the Fred Hutch. Okay. Time to how to completely ruin a recipe. This sounds like a Tina subject. She kind of beats herself up in her cooking prowess.
Some days
she comes in like once every 4 weeks or 5 weeks. She comes in, I killed it last night. But most of the other times it's like almost teary.
Ruin something again.
All right. Right back in the kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right. We're back. It's time. I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
It's the Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society. We have a lively audience, although half didn't show. I think the sunshine outside,
it's
people chose it over us.
It's just like restaurants, you know, when it's way too hot and way too nice, they just go, I'm going to barbecue and sit down on my back patio tonight.
So, Tina Knoll, our producer, you read this article. I'm not sure where you found it, but it was about... How?
I found it on a blog called MyRecipe.com about how to completely ruin a recipe, a step-by-step explanation.
And do you believe it? Like, I read this too, but do you believe that he was just trying to write an article, or do you think he actually did some of these goofy things?
I think that it's quite possible that this was a real-world experience, because it seems like some of the mistakes that were made are common things that a person might do when they're trying to follow a recipe.
I just wanted to preface this with the thought about his mother and asparagus.
Right.
That if you're coming from this kind of basis, then all the things that we're going to talk about in a few minutes might be true. That's all I'm going to say about that. So his mother...
I think it's a she, actually. Kaylee Hammonds. I was calling it he, too. I think it's a woman. Kaylee Hammonds.
Oh, her mother. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no worries.
She says, I love my parents, but cooking is not, how do I put this, their thing. My mother has been known to boil canned asparagus ahead of time, then freeze it, then thaw it out and serve it in order to save time. Now, anything is possible. If that's your basis, anything is possible.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
There is a wide open range there.
Yeah. Forget about the sad specter of the tortured stalks that may at this moment be interred in the morgue of my mother's freezer. I still don't know what the kind, what the heck kind of time saver this is. And, you know, so so there are things in the rest of this article that I think are a little bit more relevant, but that does give you a basis of where she's writing from.
Yeah. She goes on to sort of blame her father for making this potato salad. He's just trying to make a potato salad, and he does a few things that are wrong. For instance, he substituted dried herbs for fresh.
Now, we actually hear this every once in a while. Can you? Can I just use dried herbs instead of fresh? So what's your thought, Tina?
It's so funny. I find myself really... When I look at a recipe, and I think I've learned this from you, I read it through from top to bottom first. Although I have found sometimes that I don't, but most of the time I try to do that. And... again, learning from you guys, I feel like you don't want to substitute.
Right. If it calls, if your recipe, you're making a big batch of barbecue sauce or something, calls for a tablespoon of fresh thyme.
Yep.
If you put a tablespoon of dry thyme in that,
you're going to have some serious thyme.
I would say it would be 10 times too much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And literally 10 times too much. And you're going to have a barbecue sauce that doesn't taste quite the way you had dreamed about when you started the project. So,
but what you remember.
It's just so important because you get so excited about the way it looks in the pictures. Mm-hmm. And if you cut those corners, like it just won't work.
Well, I think you need to master a recipe before you can actually start playing around with it. You know, it's unless you have some good cooking skills, you should first make the recipe the way it's intended to be, written.
That's the next one on there. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And,
he says he followed some directions exactly.
Yeah.
And that so some recipes do take some independent thought, right?
Well, most recipe than you are going to be attracted by. You follow it to the T. You make the recipe exactly like it tells you. And then if you have any little chops or skill in the kitchen, you can move from there and extend or diminish or whatever. But the first time around, biggest advice for many chefs I know, just follow the recipe. It's written for a reason, a certain way, by a cook or by a chef who has made that recipe. And actually, most people retry the recipe and all that stuff. Just follow the recipe. It's not that complicated at the beginning. First, like you said, read it once, read it twice, make sure you understand. Go gather your ingredients and then go from there. Don't cut corners. Don't be a hero on the first day because you're going to be a zero by the time you're done.
And there's two things about that. Don't cut corners. One is read that recipe through, like you said, and gather your ingredients, right? Get everything there because you don't want to get your whole potato salad made and then forget that you don't have any mayonnaise, right? So gather everything together and then do it exactly as the book says. That recipe's been made dozens, if not thousands of times by the person who wrote that book.
Right.
And so at least give them the chance. The only time I would... use your imagination. I wouldn't at all if I was these people. I can tell you that.
Don't use your imagination. No.
But if you're a decent cook, like Terry said, if you're a decent cook, you can use your imagination about when you don't have the recipe in front of you. How did they get there, right? That's how I pick apart recipes all the time. I start to use my taste memory, and how do they get to that potato salad that I really liked?
Right.
The one thing I've been doing is taking a lot of notes, like because I'm cooking so much more since I've gone plant-based, and I will make it, and even if it's not very good, which often is the case with me, I'll try to figure out why. Like, how can I remake this thing and make it taste just a little bit better or alter it a little bit the next time I make it? But the first time, I definitely follow the...
I think we should start a segment where you come in with your semi-failure and then ask us how we can help you.
I actually have one in the next segment coming up. One thing
we
I'll
would all just go yet. Each time you brought in something, we'd say, well, just add a little steak to it. Add a little chicken. Add a little fish.
What's missing is the meat. Duh.
No, just kidding. I love vegetables.
I probably would say just put some butter.
True. Yeah, it will be a challenge. Okay, the other thing he did was, as you say, he made us what seemed like a simple substitution. He didn't have a nice balsamic vinegar, and he had like an old one in the pantry.
Mm-hmm.
Pulled that one out, and that one didn't work out very well.
Yeah, you should always check your pull dates. If they're within 5 years of going bad, then throw it away. Yeah, I mean, honestly, number one, you shouldn't keep balsamic. You should keep it in the refrigerator once you open it. Mm-hmm. It's just is a better product. But even then, no more than a month or two in the fridge.
Yeah,
on the shelf, oxidized on the shelf, no more than a month.
And when you check those dates, you know, if you see your vinegar being 6 months past the due date or the best of date, you know, if you're not sure if you're going to use a whole quart of vinegar, Just take that, put it in the pan, add a little sugar, bring it down to a caramel, put that in the fridge. That's going to last for 6 years. Mm-hmm. Now you have a balsamic caramel in your refrigerator you can use for ice cream, you can use for salads, dressing, anything. Rub your meat before you barbecue it. That's mm-hmm. a great, mm-hmm. You know, rub for barbecue. So just make a balsamic caramel or vinegar caramel, so which is basically a sweet and sour. It's what it comes down to. And then use that for many different usage, on sandwiches, on anything.
And as we said before, that is not, unless you use it every day, all day, it's not the time to buy that type of thing at Costco in the largest container possible. Right? You try to buy those types of things, red wine vinegar, white vinegar, that sit on your shelf for a long time, in the smallest container possible. Right. So that's key.
And that is,
and then what's the last one here, Tina, that I wanted Terry to respond to?
He used Parmesan cheese in a can.
I didn't even know it came in a can. What the heck is that?
Of course you didn't.
Well, cheese in a can isn't always a bad thing.
Cheese
I buy
in
Cougar
a can?
Gold all the time.
I love Cougar Gold.
I have 10 vintages of Cougar Gold in my fridge right now. Mm. But the green can of Kraft Parmesan.
So which year is better, 61 or 65?
It just changes. But the green can of Kraft Parmesan, not to be elitist or anything.
No.
But when that was popular, it was in 1950, right?
Yeah, well, it's 2019.
I understand. And there's Reggiano Parmesan in every grocery store now. So
yeah,
that's my suggestion.
Yeah, I mean, buy dry cheese. I mean, it's like in a can. No, I'm sorry. Move away from that. Please.
Okay. Was that all you have to say about that, Chef?
Use half the amount in a better cheese, grate it, and then you'll have a much better product on your hand. And also, it will taste a lot better. I guarantee
I would
you.
Venture to say you've never tasted Kraft green canned Parmesan cheese.
No, and I'm
yeah,
some
so
reason I
you're
get
talking,
scared.
You're talking about nothing you know about right
just
now.
Just well, I've seen people come back from that trip, and they don't look
okay,
necessarily.
I'm just making the case that you're talking without trying.
Well, that is true. That is true.
All right, we'll be right back to go into our Taste of the Week on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. Thank you for hanging with us. It's been a long break there, but we are back now live and in person here at the Hot Stove Society. Come on down anytime you're ready. $20, I guess it is, for a sandwich and a two-hour show, and you can join us right here live. So our audience today is... They're worried about their sandwich, or at least I am, about their sandwich. You know, Terry, we have a new sponsor on the show.
Would be
Camino Island. Looking forward to hanging with those folks at some point. We want to share with you the fun event happening out there. The farmers, producers, and chefs of Whidbey Island are passionate about what they do and where they live. At the end of the growing season, it's time to share the bounty of the land during the Whidbey Island Grown Week, a 10-day celebration of local products, services, and experiences coming up September 27th to October 6th. Learn more at WhidbeyCaminoIslands.com/Seattle Kitchen, or you can go right onto our Facebook page, too.
We're this is a great trip to plan. I'm liking this.
Well, it just reminds me that I haven't been up to Whidbey. I don't know that I've ever been to Camino other than driving by. Isn't it past Stanwood there?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever really driven out maybe more than once or twice, but I haven't been to Whidbey in maybe 2 years.
Yeah,
it's such a fun place to go, and the farmland is spectacular.
Make that a weekday.
Looking forward to that. We have our Taste of the Week coming up. Where did I go wrong? Some problematic recipes here. Bethany Jean Clement is going to join us. And, of course, we're going to wrap up the show with Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Tina, we're going to start with you because you came in so inspired by this new product that you found out of Portland.
Yeah, my taste of the week, is coconut, cardamom, chia seed, almond, cashew butter that I got at Whole Foods. And I walked by, one of those stands where you sample things, and I was talking to the woman, and I tasted it. It's spectacular, for one thing. I've been eating it just plain on toast with nothing else, and it makes a decadent delicious thing. And it's a sweet little company out of Portland, two women that run it. And they also have an employee program where they help people get a second chance on life. So women that have been maybe down and out, having a rough time, you can apply to their company. It's called Ground Up. And they help these women learn skills like marketing and you know, various other skills and help them, you know, transition into full-time work.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is their almond butter super delicious, but I thought the company was a really sweet story. And I hope to invite them on the show because they have a cookbook coming out as well about nut butters.
And Terry already did a recipe. He could donate it to the book.
Yeah. I used it with peaches just to make the base of a tart. I mean, that would be delicious. Yeah. I also thought, you know, if you want to make a PBG idea where you take some good jam,
amazing.
You know, this time of the year, there's a lot beautiful. Everybody's done with their blueberries, their strawberries, and raspberries and blackberry. You make some nice jam and you put that on top in a nice sandwich. Mm-hmm. That would be delicious.
What other flavor do they have?
They have all kinds. Coconut. Okay. There's about five or six of them.
Well, I'll look for them. What's the brand name again?
It's called Ground Up PDX, and their website's grounduppdx.com. You can get it at Whole Foods, or you can order it online. It's a little on the spendy side. It's like $15-16 for a jar. I know.
Like that Justin's is super expensive too, though.
Yeah, but it's so worth it because it's so good.
It goes a long ways.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do a summer salad because I just did one Sunday and I was really thinking this is what summer is all about in Seattle. Watermelon, tomatoes, heirloom tomatoes, basil from the front yard. None of the watermelon from the backyard. They were from the farmer's market. And then olive oil, salt and pepper, the whole thing on the counter for about 20 minutes, and then serve it. You know, the watermelon start oozing a little bit. You get that homemade, it basically makes like a dressing with the olive oil. So you're eating the whole thing, and then the soft crunchy of the watermelon with the sweetness of those heirloom tomato and that fresh, sweet basil right on top. I tell you, I don't need anything else for lunch or dinner. I'll have that for both meals.
Hmm.
Very good, healthy, fresh. And it's not very expensive. You just have to eat it very quickly because those tomatoes, you buy them at the farmer's market. They are almost ready. And by the time you bring them home, you only have a couple of days to last on the counter. But this is the time of the year to celebrate this because this is beautiful stuff.
Lovely. Sounds delicious.
Love that. Yeah. I think it's more and more of that celebration of summer that needs to happen. So
my taste of the week is from a local company called Beecher's. You know, everyone's very familiar with the Beecher's cheese now, the flagship, but they have a cheese that you don't see out there very often. It's called Flag Sheep. And I happened to have it on a salad, not unlike yours, but more of a pasta primavera with a flag sheep, a little pappardelle pasta, lots of vegetables, and then instead of Reggiano Parm, which is kind of what I would normally put on there, or maybe little dollops of fresh chèvre, I grated the flag sheep into the pasta. And man, it's just, there's an unctuousness about sheep's milk cheese that you don't get in cow. Cow, you get creamy richness.
And also a flavor.
The flavor of sheep cheese. Cow, you get kind of creamy richness. Goat cheese, you get more of a bright, almost acid kind of flavor. Sheep's milk cheese, you get that unctuousness, that kind of earthy quality that it's hard to find in other cheeses, I think.
Sheep cheese feels mature. When you eat, it feels like something that's really mature and beautiful. It's Agoo, all those different cheeses that you have around the Larzac, you know, in the south of France. Same thing where they have the hashes in between the layers. Oh, that's such
Well, I just think it's right in our backyard, and people don't think about it very much.
Right.
And it's called Flag Sheep, Beecher's Flag Sheep. It's made right here in the Pike Place Market. It's super fabulous and delicious, and
you know,
grated on anything. It would be good on your watermelon salad.
Yeah,
I was
going to say, I forgot to mention that in my watermelon salad with tomato, I put actually some crumbled feta cheese, which I forgot to mention that because that's what actually brings the whole thing of that sweetness, that beautiful freshness, and then perky. A little bit of saltiness from the feta cheese with the olive oil is delicious.
You can sometimes find sheep's milk feta cheese too.
Yeah.
So. Pretty simple to do. Okay, that's our taste of the week. Where did I go wrong? We do get this question. Normally I get it in the aisleway at Ballard Market or Shoreline Central, and somebody says,
"Hey, Tom, I was making a thing."
They don't even say, "Hey, Tom." They just walk up and they start saying, "I really messed up my broccoli last night. It just overcooked it, blah, blah, blah." It's like, "Hi, I'm Tom. What's your name?" But that's usually where I get these kind of questions. But for you, right here on your radio, we're going to do it on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. As usual, we're coming from the Hot Stove Society, and we have some questions that Tina kind of picked up. One is your own, which is going to be interesting. But
I like to use the show for my self-gain.
Hey, why not?
The name of this segment is Where Did I Go Wrong? And let's get started, Tina, with your fried rice.
All right. I made some fried rice the other night. I followed the recipe. I was very excited about it. It was delicious, but the texture was very off. It was super gummy. It was just like a goo ball.
Mm-hmm.
So what you said you followed the recipe. Tell us the recipe.
Well, I need to pull it up.
No, but that's okay. Just tell us what you remember.
Yeah, what
so
you remember.
You started with rice.
I started with rice.
And
so
did
I
it come right out of the cooker, or did you let it sit on the counter for a bit?
Right out of the cooker.
That's a problem.
Oh, yeah, that's
okay.
A problem.
Number one. Okay, and then what?
So I also, I don't use oil very often at all, so I used vegetable broth instead of oil for
so
frying.
So you fried in broth.
Yeah, so
the audience is laughing at you right now.
Yeah.
They're not now. They're laughing with you. They're
yeah, laughing
at you.
Yeah. So, so I actually I sautéed the vegetables first, from what I remember.
In broth also.
In this vegetable broth. So okay.
Okay, so you can't use the word sauté.
Poached vegetables.
Yeah, you can't use the word sauté or fry if you're using a liquid like a vegetable stock.
Oh, what did I do then?
You poached. You might braise. That you certainly cannot sauté.
All right, all right.
All right, so you have hot rice with more broth, so you just basically cooked your rice to death, and that's why it gummed up on
right.
you. And, yeah.
All right, so I am going to try this recipe again because it was delicious, and I will retry it. Mm-hmm. But now what do I do? If I'm not going to use oil...
If you want to... Did you already throw all that away, or did you...
No. I've been actually... Is it still in your fridge? Yeah, it's still in my fridge.
So, and why don't you use oil? What happened there?
I mean, part of the whole food plant-based is hardly any processed oil.
Yeah.
Like no olive oil even?
Anything. If they...
If it's just weighted.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I can use a little bit of olive oil.
So put that in a pan. Mash your rice into thin little cakes. If it's sticky, they're going to stick together.
Okay.
But make a thin little cakes out of them and pan fry rice cakes.
Oh, okay.
And then you'll have a nice, you'll save your rice. Okay, what's the next one?
Okay, so your next one is what if, here's something that could go wrong in a kitchen. You make chicken in a skillet and it cooks unevenly.
Are you frying it in vegetable broth or are you actually...
Sure. No, you're absolutely not frying anything in vegetable broth.
So if you're cooking in a skillet, it will definitely bring challenges if you're trying to cook the entire time in that skillet. One of the secrets of that is to probably cover it so you end up using the idea of an oven where the heat just keeps rotating and cook more evenly because the whole thing is getting cooked. But when you put in a skillet, the heat is from below. So if you don't have an even surface like the top part of your wings and the breast, you know, which is much thicker than, for example, your thighs. So you're going to have, first of all, you should cut down your pieces to be more even in sizes. So I would recommend cutting the legs in half. I would recommend cutting the wing off the breast and separate those pieces. So they will not take the same amount of time to cook. When if you're roasting or putting it in the oven, it will have a much more bigger chance to cook more evenly. Tom?
Well, I would say most people are probably using a chicken breast or a chicken thigh. They're not trying to pan fry a whole chicken. So my guess is if, let's just say a breast, which is the most popular chicken meat out there. Terry's culture, I will say, has a process called paillard,
mm-hmm.
where you put the chicken breast in between two pieces of plastic wrap and you pound it out so that it's even. And then you can pan fry the whole thing evenly, and it takes care of the problem right there. It's delicious. You get a little brown on it. You pan fry it in olive oil. If you want to be decadent, go with duck fat or bacon fat or something like that
mm-hmm.
for a little more flavor.
Or just put it in the oven on a sheet pan if you don't want to use any fat. Just put it a little bit on a piece of parchment paper in a baking oven and then bake it. It will bake more evenly.
And is there any way to salvage that if you've done it, you've baked your chicken unevenly, you just throw it back in and kind of try to work it out? Like,
yeah, I mean, like Tom said, the paillard idea is a good idea.
To salvage it? What do you mean by that?
Like, if it indeed cooked unevenly and you have
so
this chicken
now... it's a little
now,
bit raw in the middle?
Yeah.
And what are you making with the chicken? Do you have any idea? Are you making, like, if you're making a pasta where you're going to dice it up, yeah, you can do that.
Just put it
you
back
can
in.
Just pop the whole thing back into the oven or simply slice it thin like you might be slicing a steak mm-hmm. and then just put it under the broiler for a second and just finish cooking it.
Right.
I think the health department says above 160, 165, something like that.
I say 140.
Well, that's different. You're not the health department.
I'm not the health department.
Yeah.
All right, here's your next one. If you are sautéing your spinach and it comes out too soggy, where did you go wrong?
Where'd you go wrong?
Pull them out of the pan a little bit earlier.
So for me and spinach, I love sautéed spinach. I often order it for breakfast in the morning. Instead of hash browns, I'll have sautéed spinach. For me, it's a hot pan with a little bit of olive oil, and then I take my spinach, and you have to use a lot because it wilts down, but I take it and I just literally saute it for 10 seconds and pull it out and let the residual heat continue to cook it. If you take it much longer than that, all the moisture comes out of the spinach leaves. You've collapsed the cells in the spinach. All the water comes out. You end up with a lot of juice and not much spinach.
You end up with what he's asking about. So, yes, just don't cook it as long. Just go really fast. Make sure your pan is hot, and then you hear that searing sound, and then toss it a few minutes and add all your stuff you want to add to your spinach after that. You know, if you want to put some shallots.
Or before.
Or beforehand.
Like if you're going to saute a little garlic.
Yeah, cook it beforehand, and then add your spinach. Spinach is the last thing that goes in the pan, and it only goes
10 seconds.
Yeah, 10 seconds, 15 seconds max.
All right, you are making your oatmeal, and it is turning out to be very lumpy. Where did you go wrong?
Don't put so much liquid in it, and don't leave it on the counter for 2 hours.
You ate oatmeal. It belongs in the horse feed pot. That's a problem.
No. I think it's just because it's over-soaked and too much time. You know, if you go fast on your oatmeal, it won't get as soggy, and it will keep its texture. I mean, these are very basic little ideas that once you understand how it works...
You won't do it again.
You don't do it again.
All right. How about you're trying to caramelize some onions. You just give up after 15 minutes because they're just not caramelizing. Nothing's happening. They're not interesting. Where
Calm
you
down
go?
Already.
Where did you go wrong?
Down,
Slow
everyone.
Down.
Yeah. You're moving too fast.
Got to make the onions last. 15 minutes, they should have started to brown a little bit. But really, if you got them on a nice low heat, it's up to you. If the higher the heat, the more you have to watch them because they will burn quickly. If you leave them on low and slow with a little butter or olive oil, just did them the other night for a little steak tacos, it probably takes a half hour to get them to where I want them.
Bottom line is this. If you're in a hurry, don't try to make something that takes a long time. You know, make yourself a sunny side up. That should take about 2 minutes.
But I also think that some people think you can't overcook browned onions, and I think you can. I don't like them all the way to mush. I like still a little mouth texture on my browned onions.
You can overcook anything. Everything is possible to overcook, for sure.
But like we were talking about on the bacon earlier, it's like you can just take them to where it's just a pasty, not very interesting kind of thing. So, okay, we have a guest here from the Seattle Times. Bethany Jean Clement is coming. Up next on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. And as you know, we often talk about food in the news, but the news made food the news last week in the Seattle Times. There was a big article about how the Providence Cicero is retired, as you know, from reviewing restaurants.
Thank you for all those great years.
Exactly. And there's an article about kind of a new style of reviewing, and it was written by Bethany Jean Clement, who has joined us here today.
Hello.
I haven't seen you in a
long time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be here.
I think last time I saw you, you were walking across 4th Avenue.
Yes.
And I told a story a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago on the show, about I had an ex-employee who wrote me a note, like a scary kind of FBI kind of note, saying, I was parked at the light when you were walking across 4th Avenue, and I could have killed you.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think about restaurateur seeing the reviewer going across the street and thinking, oh, my God, here's my chance.
That's terrifying.
Hopefully more people like your writing versus hate your writing.
I hope
That's what you want to... It's just like us. We hope more customers like a restaurant versus hating it.
Yeah, right. There shouldn't be any murder involved.
No murder.
Unless you're making a theater piece, you know, of some kind.
There was that movie called Who's Killing the Great Chefs of Europe?
And
it was the food reviewer who had gotten awfully large.
Spoiler
and
alert.
Blamed the chefs. That's right. I don't think anyone's going to watch that movie, so I gave away the...
It's 40 years old.
And he kills them with their favorite food.
Anyway.
Or cooks them with their favorite food. There's all kinds of crazy stuff. Tell us about the new Seattle Times, if you don't mind, and tell us about you and all your history in food writing. And
Oh, well, My colleague Tan Vin and I are actually taking over the restaurant reviewing as a team. And that kind of came about because he and I have written some stories before. One recent one, we visited all the new posh Seattle rooftop restaurants and bars and evaluated them on their drinks, the food, the view, the whole experience. And we had a lot of fun with it, but we also took it pretty seriously. We wanted to find the best of those places because they're very expensive, and dining out in Seattle is very expensive. The answer to the best rooftop bar and restaurant is M Bar, which is in South Lake Union, if people are interested in that. Anyway, Tan has been at the Seattle Times for a long time, writing about all sorts of things. One of his beats was actually hiking and separately cocktails. So
hopefully not at the same time.
Right. You don't want to fall off the trail. But people always say writing about food is the best job. I kind of think writing about hiking and cocktails is at least as good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Tan came here from Vietnam. He has an incredible palate. He's a really smart guy and a great writer. I grew up here in Seattle on Capitol Hill with a grandmother who raised Angus cattle out in eastern Washington. So we come from really different backgrounds, and we thought it would be fun and better for the city to have a couple of voices writing about restaurants here. Sometimes we'll team up to write about a place, which we did for one of our reviews in the package that just came out last week. And sometimes we'll write about places separately. Mm-hmm. We really want to hold chefs accountable here in Seattle because, as I said, dining out is really expensive. There haven't been a lot of negative restaurant reviews written in this city in the recent past. We're not going to go out of our way to do that. But if there's a place that people are really excited about and it's just not that good, we are there to warn people. So we're not going to shy away from that.
So to have an idea of, because, I mean, you guys are just like normal people. You're just like anyone who comes to a restaurant. Is there something specific you're looking for in a restaurant? We know that dining out is very expensive, so obviously you're going to be paying attention to all the details. Is there some highlights that people should be, you know, if Bethany comes in, she's looking for example, I don't know, she wants to make sure she's greeted properly at the front door or whatever. I mean, there's all kind of, it's an event to go out to dinner for me, at least. I always considered it an event. And I think there is many things that get the event to be complete. So do you have any specific items in there?
Oh, I mean, Chef, there are so many different things to look for, especially depending on what kind of restaurant.
Right.
And we're really going to be going out of our way to review all kinds of restaurants at all kinds of price points. So, for instance, in the package that came out a week ago, I wrote about a place called Spice Walla on Capitol Hill. And it's counter service. There's no one greeting you.
Right.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It's wonderful, and the food is wonderful, and it's really inexpensive. The people that run it, they're this incredibly nice couple, and I gave that restaurant 3.5 out of 4 stars because they're doing what they set out to do really, really well. Mm-hmm. At a higher-end place, will I be looking for how I'm greeted and, you know, do they clear the plates too quickly or not quickly enough, that kind of thing? Sure. But we're going to really be focusing on diversity and bringing people really great food, recommending the really great places no matter where they are or how much they cost.
Yeah, and I've always agreed with that mentality of giving 3.5 stars to a countertop that does exactly what they're set up to do. I think that's, to me, that makes perfect logic.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I mean, it's always, to me, I'm always baffled by, you know, it's not because it's a countertop. If they do the best sandwich in the world, why shouldn't they get rewarded the same way? Because the stars that you give away, which is number one, your stars, I mean, you know, you're giving them away. But most importantly, the scale is based on the standard of what they're setting up for. And I think if they achieve what they're saying they're going to and charge you for, then they should get rewarded for it.
Well, I think that's exactly right, but there has been sort of a historical precedent where a four-star place had to be very high-end. It had to have white tablecloths and someone greeting you at the door, and every element of service mm-hmm. needed to be perfect. We don't agree with that. We, like you're saying, we want to meet places where they are and yeah. evaluate them that
way. We have too many cross-culture in this town to get bogged down with the old-fashioned way, I think.
Yes. I think David Chang really was instrumental in changing that outlook for especially right. the New York Times reviewers to kind of make them take him seriously where he was coming from, rather than trying to do like a Michelin mm-hmm. rated system where you have to have the right china, the right silver, right. the right glassware, certain type of linen with a certain thread count, you know, which for him had nothing to do with how good was his pho or how good was his you know, his restaurant in general. So mm-hmm.
absolutely. Yeah. You are still seeing very positive reviews in some papers, which then end up only being one star, which seems still a
like
little off to me.
That seems odd to me. I agree with
both
finish,
of you. You finish by, I love this place so much, and they give you one star. It's like, what?
Right, exactly.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily unreasonable. I love this place, and it's only one star because it wasn't as good as a three-star. It didn't mean it was a bad restaurant. I mean, that's one-star Michelins are considered terrific restaurants.
Yeah, we've had a lot of debate about the star system, Tan and I and our editor. And, you know, we decided to keep going with it because we think people find it valuable. It's a really, you know, it's scannable. It's something mm-hmm. people can understand really easily. But we're going to be doing it with a lot of care. Mm-hmm. As for other things that we're looking for, we're trying not to be too cranky, but we are going to be really seriously looking at how loud restaurants are, because there are places where you cannot hear your companion across the table talking, much less yourself think. They're just deafening. And I don't, you know, that's not an enjoyable experience for me. And we hear from a lot of readers, too, who just want places to be quieter. Mm-hmm. There is a little bit of thinking out there that some restaurants are going out of their way to be a little bit noisier. It turns tables faster. They've actually found that it sells more alcoholic beverages, I think, because people are just like...
Yeah, I would
like,
definitely want another cocktail for sure.
Exactly. It's so loud. Down. You're like, my head. And then, you know, and then you get out of there faster. So,
that's not... We have a couple that are louder, but certainly that's not the reasons why. It's just part of the tempo or the hipness of the scene or whatever that you're trying to be part of. So
sure, and I think that some people can tolerate a fair amount of noise level, and sometimes that makes it more exciting or festive.
Or it fits the style of the joint sometimes,
right.
too.
Right, so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
You have a variety of places.
I do.
So.
Yeah, and from the quietest probably is the Dahlia to some of the noises, maybe even Lola. Because it's busy, and it's also got all windows, right? There's not a lot I could do down there, but it is what it is. You can either enjoy it or you don't, or you come back or you don't. So,
right.
The other thing that I would love to see kind of talked about is certainly, you know, we as a city have decided a certain expense structure in these restaurants, and that that is part of why restaurants' prices have gone through the roof, is that it's an astonishing... rise of expenses over the last 5 years with our particular city council and mayor's office, and I'd be interested in talking about
and it's not over. It's going to keep going.
Yeah, there's the new one coming down with hotel restaurants.
Which
is eye-watering. Yeah. We found in one of our restaurants that's in a hotel, it's an extra $200,000 a year. $200,000.
It would be $50,000 at Lule.
Yeah. Next week, let's have you back on the show, if you don't mind.
I would love that, Tom.
Thank you. Well, now we're going to jump to our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. Everyone's got their handful of sandwich right now. So delicious. Chef, it's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, but all the other chefs that usually join us are chicken today. They've run away.
They're smarter than us. They're on vacation.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway, we had a brave audience member join us who didn't want to, but her family forced her to. I'm assuming their family.
Yes.
Yes, because a lot of times family doesn't treat their person like that. But they did.
Actually,
they're very special.
They're very special.
I think only family would do that to you.
That's right.
So we have Alan has joined us from the audience. She's going to play against us. And Alan, as I told you before we started this segment, you can give away anything that I own up to $100 value, any of the restaurant businesses that I own, not my daughter and not all those kind of things, but you might want to give away. Is that your daughter?
Daughter-in-law.
Daughter-in-law. You might want to give her away right now. She's the one who did the finger
she's
above your head.
She's throwing you in the pit.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Anyway, so do you have a favorite of our joints? Do you even know any of our joints?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Sirius Pie?
All right. Sirius Pie it is.
My favorite.
A $100 gift card to Sirius Pie, which is probably enough for four people to go.
Mm-hmm. That would be if Tom loses, but if I lose.
No, no, that's if she loses.
Oh, if she loses. Okay.
Right. I still have to give away my own thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I will give you a brunch for two at Luke in Madison Valley.
Ooh.
Very nice. And my prize today will be a cooking class for two here at the Hot Stove Society, which is $170 value, I believe.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
There you go. Generous man, generous man.
It's just a regular class for two. Okay.
All right, guys, here's how this game is played. Each of you will get five questions. Whoever gets the most right is the winner. Whoever gets the least amount of answers correct is the loser. And that loser will give something away to the fan of our show. Her name is Emily Sakuma. She will be a winner no matter what happens today.
Okay.
Who would like to go first?
I will start.
All right, Chef Terry. What cut of fish is a whole side removed from the central vertebrae?
A filet.
Correct. Question number two. What bread relies on a moist batter and two heat settings to cause it to pop over its mold and form a hollow interior?
Popovers.
Yep.
Oh, that is just ridiculous.
That is a ridiculous question.
Alan, how do you feel about this?
Lost.
No, Helen, that's pretty easy, right? So far, so good, right? I'm going to jinx
that's
myself.
Two for
here.
Two. Question number three. How many named apple varieties were growing in the United States in 1900? You have some options.
Okay.
80, 800, or 8,000 varieties?
In 1800?
1900.
Does it make a difference, Chef?
Yes, it does. I would go 80.
Actually, about 8,000 varieties. Today, most are extinct or dying out.
Oh, wow.
8,000 varieties of apples.
I wonder who cut all this.
All right, question number four for you. True or false?
Yeah.
Conventional farming refers to old ways of farming practiced before pesticides, synthetic fertilizers, monocropping, and the use of antibiotics and growth hormones.
Wrong. False.
You are correct. They were looking for
conventional,
false.
It sucks. I mean, did I say that?
Your last question, Chef Rotaro. What term describes someone who prefers food that's been harvested or produced as close to home as possible?
Localivore.
Correct. Localivore is the answer. That is four out of five, correct. And Valen, show it.
Yeah.
Ellen, are you ready for your five questions?
Okay.
Okay.
Would you like to call somebody from the audience?
Yes.
I'm confident. I have a lot of confidence in you. I think you'll be just fine. Your first question, malt, an integral ingredient in beers and other alcohols, is produced from which grain?
Barley.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, Chef Rotaro, we have a team against
yeah.
us.
There's like three of them going, barley!
Question number two. What is the name of the process in which chocolate is melted, colored, and reheated to make it more malleable?
Tempering.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to get crushed.
Yeah, I feel that too.
Question number three for you. For dessert, you are served a square slice of ice cream with pink, brown, and white sections. This is called a what? A terrible mistake. A Neapolitan. A pavlova. A zamboloni.
Neapolitan.
Correct. The last one I didn't pronounce right. Nicely done. What is the English name for the French loup de mer or the Italian branzino?
It's a fish.
It is.
But
what kind? Loup de Mer.
Uh-oh, the audience. Oh, we family's turning you down.
I actually know the answer.
What is it, chef?
It's striped sea bass.
It is sea bass.
Of course.
It's actually striped sea bass.
I meant to say that.
I know you meant.
All right, 3 correct, 1 incorrect. You are doing very well. You need to get this one right to tie with Chef Terry. Which country is credited with first practicing the art of noodle making? Is it Italy or China?
China.
Correct. Nicely
yes.
done.
Bravo. 4 out of 5. We have a tie at the top.
That's a tie.
Nice job, Ellen.
Nicely done.
That's very nice.
All right, Chef Tom Douglas, you need to get 4 correct in order to tie with everybody, or 5 for the win. That's a perfect score. You're going to need a perfect score here. You ready for it? No
oh,
pressure.
Yes.
All right, I'm done. Which chicken is generally more flavorful, a broiler fryer or a roaster?
I'm going to go with a roaster.
You are correct. A roaster
Ooh.
Is the answer.
Had a 50-50
nice.
Shot.
That was a trick question because the roaster is not as tender, but it's definitely more flavorful.
All right, question number 2. The milk from which breed of cow contains the most protein, minerals, and vitamins? And fat. All the things. Is it Jersey, Holstein, or Hefford?
We've had that question before.
Have we? Yeah. I would say it's a hybrid of all three. They're all in the same feedlot.
Smart man, Mr. Douglas.
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to go with Jersey.
That's correct. Jersey is the answer. Ooh. 2 out of 2 for you. Question number 3. What color are coffee beans when they're first picked?
Well, there's
you
the
guys?
Coffee cherries, and then there's the green bean. So I'm not sure with what you're saying. I'll say red.
Nope.
I'd say green.
Green
no,
is the answer.
The bean is when they're picked. They're cherries. They're red cherries. They're not green.
All right. You need to get all of these next 2 correct in order to tie. What was the original reasoning behind beginning the American school year in September and ending it in June?
So the kids could work on Prosser Farm.
That's correct. Your last question.
Except now they want $20 an hour.
Your last question. True or false, soybeans contain all 20 amino acids.
Absolutely.
And are therefore
true.
A complete protein. Soybeans?
Yes.
The answer is false. Soybeans
false.
Lack the amino acid methionine.
I guess that makes me a loser. Congratulations.
Emily Sukuma.
To Emily Sukuma and Ellen for being such a good sport, you get a $100 gift card, or your choice. You can keep the Serious Pie gift card for $100. How about that?
Oh, thank you.
All right. Emily gets 2 tickets here to the Hot Stove Society. If you want to be part of the show, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Tina Noll at Large Media. That's LARJ Media. And our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. Production assistant, Miss Abigail. And special thanks to our guest, if we have any. That would be Bethany Jean Clement. And thanks to all the folks here at the Hot Stove Society. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $20. It comes with breakfast, which was pretty delicious.
Yep.
And hot coffee. Also, remember, if you missed any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or download the Cairo Radio app. And search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.